Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hello, everyone. We know one thing about the Shirley Sherrod incident this week. The right-wing media, the NAACP, and the Obama administration can all wind up with egg on their faces for the same thing. Shirley Sherrod was no anti-white bigot, as a misleading video clip seemed to suggest. She was just the opposite, a black civil rights veteran from Jim Crow, Georgia, whose family was terrorized by the Ku Klux Klan, but who learned to look beyond race to work in unity with whites, as the fuller video of her speech to the NAACP made abundantly clear.
Working with him made me see that it's really about those who have versus those who don't.
Right. Right.
You know, and they could be black, they could be white, they could be Hispanic.
Him being a white farmer, she helped. Also, just for the historical record, people may not realize that Shirley's husband was Charles Sherrod, a legendary civil rights leader in Georgia, a founder of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which worked closely and effectively with Martin Luther King in those days. But what are the deeper lessons to be learned from the firing of Shirley Sherrod? Journalistic lessons about checking the context before running with a video clip, even if you're with the activist opinion media. Management lessons. Sherrod's supervisors at the Agriculture Department sacked her before she was given a chance to defend herself. Political lessons. Maybe the Obama team, maybe the NAACP, made decisions in reaction to the cable TV news machine more than they like to admit. And there are lessons about, are there lessons, I should say, about Acorn, the other anti-poverty workers brought down, at least in part, by misleading videos on Andrew Breitbart's website. And are there lessons about race? We don't seem to be having a national conversation or even a beer summit over this one. Just bad feelings all around, except toward Shirley Sherrod, who maybe should pull a Sarah Palin now, not work for the government anymore, and write a best-selling book. She certainly got the life story to write about. Writing about this whole sorry incident is Joel Dreyfus, managing editor of the black-oriented site The Root. We are also expecting David Frum from Frum Forum, who posted about the case. He's the former Bush speechwriter who coined the term axis of evil, among many other things. But Joel Dreyfus, thanks for coming on WNYC today. Hello. Joel, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, we got you. You go after Andrew Breitbart in your article, the conservative activist and blogger who posted the misleading Sherrod clip in the first place. And you quote Breitbart saying this week that this is not about Shirley Sherrod. I don't care about Shirley Sherrod. It's about the NAACP and the Democratic Party and the Congressional Black Caucus calling the Tea Party racist. What's your reaction to that framing?
Well, I think it shows the motivation and it shows why the mainstream media, if you want to call it that, has to be so careful about where sources come, what the sources of their information is. This guy has an unabashed political agenda. He was angry that the NAACP had condemned racism in the Tea Party, and he decided to get back at them. And the way to get back was to doctor a tape, make it look like this woman was racist. And, you know, it's very open what he did. I guess the big surprise for us should be why everybody just accepted it on face value, knowing his record.
Also with us now is David Frum, former Bush speechwriter who coined the term axis of evil, among other things. He now blogs at his own site, frumforum.com, which sells a mug called, coffee mug that says, "Drink coffee, not Kool-Aid." So that's a good slogan. Hi, David.
Hi there. We also have a T-shirt of a rampaging, ferocious-looking rhinoceros over the caption, "Who are you calling a rhino?"
Rhino. Are you a rhino, Republican in name only at this point?
No, I am a total Republican, and that's I like to do things like win elections and govern effectively afterwards, and that's why I have very little patience for people who want to turn politics into a game of mutual frat tricks and competing narratives of victimhood. I don't know how that there are a lot of things in these very distressed economic times that conservatives should want to do very differently from what the president is doing, and we should be offering those alternatives instead of saying, like, you know, those soccer players in the World Cup, "Oh, my shin hurts. Oh, he hit me first.
David, you compare on your site the fate of Andrew Breitbart to that of Dan Rather when, as you put it, he succumbed to the forged Bush war record hoax in 2004. What comparison are you trying to make?
Well, Dan Rather was handed these fake documents. They were obviously faked. They were composed using computer fonts that didn't exist at the time of the font existed, but the particular way the font was used just couldn't have been done in the middle 1970s, certainly not by anybody without extraordinary technological access. So the forgery was caught within minutes by knowledgeable people as soon as it was posted. But he wanted very badly to believe the story, and so he didn't check as thoroughly as he should have. Breitbart didn't check at all, because he wanted even more badly to believe the story. He says he didn't doctor this tape himself, but let's say that that's right. But it's an obviously doctored tape, and you would think it would make you suspicious.
And there was, a blogger. Dan Rather was working for CBS News. Independent blogger, well, maybe he made this mistake, or maybe he did it on purpose, but nobody's there to fire him. What are you suggesting?
What am I suggesting for him? Well, of course,
yeah.
I wasn't suggesting anything. I was observing that, in fact, in the piece I read about this, there will be no consequence. It took 24 hours for Breitbart to figure out an excuse for what had happened, and the excuse is not really very plausible. It was that he never intended to target the person who got targeted, that what he was really trying to do was expose the NAACP in general.
This is part of a kind of a right-wing scenario of proving that black organizations or that black people in general are as racist as some white people are. And I think it's an attempt to undermine any kind of remaining moral advantage that blacks have from having struggled for their freedom. And I think that show up all the time in the right-wing, fantasies. Obama's a racist.
Hang on, Joel. Joel, go ahead. Finish the thought.
It's kind of a recurring fantasy, It's part of the accusations that, Obama is a racist, everybody's a racist who's black and in any kind of authority. The scenario that they're doing now about the new Black Panther Party, as if Obama and the Attorney General have some kind of skin solidarity with these right-wing, with these sort of militant nutcases.
In fact, let me take a phone call on that, because I had said earlier that, I talked earlier about this kind of being in response, and Breitbart said it was in response to the Tea Party being called racist by the NAACP. We have a caller who says it actually goes back to this new Black Panther Party case and the U.S. Justice Department. Murray in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Hi.
I just first-time caller here. I wanted to point out to your guests, so that it goes back to the voter intimidation case back during the elections that the Black Panther Party intimidated some white voters. And the Justice Department is unwilling. Eric Holder has said that he won't prosecute this, which is a flagrant violation of civil rights.
And therefore what? Therefore you doctor a videotape of Shirley Sherrod?
Well, it opens up a can of worms. That's what happens.
I find it amusing that here's a guy like Holder who has dedicated his life to civil rights work. He's a respected attorney. He's got a long career as a public servant. And the assumption is that somehow this is some kind of racial. In fact, the accusation has been made that this is some kind of reparation not to prosecute these guys. If your caller is really interested, Adam Serwer has written a long. He's a blogger. He's written a long analysis of the law. The law was meant to apply to massive, wide-scale voter intimidation, not individual cases. These two guys stood outside a polling place for an hour, a couple of hours. One had a nightstick. He looked like a security guard. And then there's some video of them, yelling crazy stuff. I think that the government just basically said this is not the kind of case this law was ever meant to apply to, and they've got an injunction against the guy being near a polling station. But this is the kind of madness that I think we're seeing, and that's fed by bloggers who don't have the restraints that a Dan Rather had, and, you know, we didn't have the researchers and all the people who were supposed to be the sort of barriers and quality controls.
Well, David Frum, do you want to weigh in on the context here?
Yeah, I think by entering into the context, you completely swallow the bait. And this is exactly what Breitbart wanted you to do, and this is the thing that I was writing about. Look, if I dump trash all over your yard, and you come out to complain, I don't have an excuse. I may try to change the subject to the need for our society to have a better policy for dealing with recyclable refuse. And if I can persuade you to join me in these high fields of generality, we quickly move away from the very specific thing that I've done. The point is, I don't know what the right and wrongs of the new Black Panther case are, and I'm perfectly prepared to consider that justice departments follow the election returns, the same as the rest of the U.S. government does. And governments are historically more ready to go after political enemies than they are to go after political friends. So it wouldn't shock me a bit if there was some – it would shock me. It wouldn't surprise me a bit if there were some thumb on the scales in the Black Panther case. I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me. But that's not the point, because even if it's true – it doesn't matter. What matters is that when you, the moral category journalist is distinct from ordinary human being is fading a little bit. So as we're all going to be journalists in the future. We all have the capacity, whether on Facebook or whatever, to do damage to people's reputations. So if you get a hold of a document that seems to hurt somebody's reputation with probably large consequences to them, you should make some effort to verify it. That's true whether you're Dan Rather. That's true whether you're a blogger. That's true whether you're a teenager with a Facebook account.
Has it become clear to either of you exactly what Breitbart's role was? Joel, you said doctoring a video before. He says the tape was given to him already edited in the misleading way, which he didn't realize. That's not an excuse. But is it true as far as you know? Because he is so prominent in conservative media circles that if he himself misleadingly edited it, he's got a bigger problem than maybe we even think he does. Do you know?
You know, if he didn't doctor it, it, like I said, it fulfilled his need at that point. You know, he was trying to prove a point, and he wanted to prove that people at the NAACP were racist, and somebody gave him a tape that or video that fulfilled that fantasy. That's not how journalism works. And, you know, and the problem we have is we have the media, which knows about the processes and procedures of media, of journalism, abandoning these things in this heated cycle of, you know, constant news and constant 24-hour news cycle where there's very little time for analysis, for thinking, for checking or fact-checking. You know, these things are, have disappeared, and I think we need to have – people have to understand there's got to be a differentiation of what the sources are.
Does it go both ways, David, and my guest Joel Dreyfus from The Root, David Frum from Forum, as we talk about the Breitbart Shirley Sherrod case? I'm going to read you a post from your own website by a reader who says let me say that the fact that you go on Keith Olbermann's show, I guess you were on Olbermann last night talking about this,
yeah,
explains the exasperation that many conservatives feel towards you. You bash Rush Limbaugh, Mark Levin, et cetera, because of those horrible things that they say. But Olbermann, not exactly known for his reasoned and intelligent political commentary, is a perfectly acceptable host. So what do you say to that reader of your site?
Well, I would say a couple of things. The first is that I have never had any hesitation tangling with people on the left. I went on the Rachel Maddow show a couple of years ago, just after I was back from Afghanistan. She opened with a series of sarcastic remarks about my friend Paul Wolfowitz, and we had a huge fight about that, which you can look up on YouTube. So I'm perfectly prepared to go toe-to-toe with anybody when they do things that I think are wrong. On the other hand, Lawrence O'Donnell, who was the host that night, I've got a lot of regard for him. He's a straight shooter. It was a straight-up interview. And what is implicit, and by the way, and our site spends 85% of its time criticizing the Obama financial regulation, criticizing the Obama stimulus, criticizing the monetary policy being conducted during the Obama administration. We have lots and lots of criticisms of the policies of this administration. We are not by any means supporters of theirs. That said, it is a crazy thing when you say, I am only going to take the news from a source that I approve of. It shows how we are, that one of the big culprits in all of this, and we don't like to say this, it's the audience. The audience has to work harder. The audience has to cease to cocoon itself. And there are now interesting psychological studies about how people can make themselves more or less responsive to absorbing factual information. If you I would say that if you have taken an attitude that we have to live in the fox cocoon, are you serving conservatism, or are you helping to build a captive market for one particular profit-making enterprise? And I'm not a shareholder of that profit-making enterprise. I don't see why it's something that I have a big stake in.
And Fox News Channel may come off even worse in this than Andrew Breitbart, because they claim to be a fair and balanced news organization in a way that Andrew Breitbart doesn't and doesn't have to. So in a way, what they did was worse for airing the misleading video clip many times without verifying it. Do you agree, David?
Well, I think they were bamboozled. It's a sobering fact, but cable news outlets generally rely a great deal on bloggers to do the checking for them. Cable news also doesn't really have much in the way, especially these evening debate shows, doesn't have much in the way of resource for checking. So they think the bloggers are doing it in that kind of crowdsourcing way. Well, if you get it wrong, you'll be caught within minutes. And indeed, that's what happened, that this thing was caught within minutes, but not quite enough minutes to save the first evening's broadcast.
Joel, Breitbart's site was also the conduit for the acorn sting videos that seemed to show a few acorn workers willing to help people who were telling them they were prostitutes and pimps to possibly avoid paying taxes. That brought down one of the leading organizations in the country devoted to helping poor people with direct services of all kinds. And those tapes were found to be misleadingly edited, too.
Yeah, in fact, there was a whole series of criminal investigations that all came to naught. And in fact, the process of investigation showed how much the tapes had been doctored. In fact, for example, one man they had approached for this help in setting up this sex trafficking thing they were trying to do actually got on the phone and called the police immediately after they left, after trying to solicit information from them on where they were staying and how they could be reached. So here's an example of, after the fact, it's much too late. The correction is never as big as the scandal story on the front page, as we know from the old media. And I think it applies to new media as well. So the horse is out of the barn. Acorn, which I think, obviously had serious management problems, as many organizations do, is pretty much wiped out by this guy and his organization. And after the fact, we find out, that's not exactly what the people said. It was edited. There was voiceovers put in. So you don't know what questions were actually being asked, of the answers that were solicited from these people. But this is the medium we live in today. And unfortunately, the public, and I agree with David, the public has to begin to be more discerning in terms of the information they're getting.
David, do you think that Acorn was in effect brought down under false pretenses?
Acorn does a lot of bad stuff, and has been itself in federal court for abusive financial resources that are contributed by governments or extracted from private corporations. So I hold no brief for them, and this may be a case of the Al Capone tax exemption as income tax fraud way in which they were brought down. That said, you shouldn't falsify tapes.
I want to play one more clip from the Sherrod speech given in March to a Georgia NAACP audience. Some people are saying a lesson here is the support of the crowd to the part where she talks about not helping a white man to the fullest before she goes on to make it clear that it's a consciousness-raising story about not being sensitive to somebody's skin in that context. Here's that clip, and I don't think it's true that the crowd was cheering anti-white bias. Listen.
Right. I know what he was doing, but he had to come to me for help. What he didn't know, while he was taking all that time trying to show me he was superior to me, was I was trying to decide just how much help I was going to give him. I was struggling with the fact that so many black people have lost their farmland, and here I was faced with having to help a white person save their land. So I didn't give him the full force of what I could do. I did enough so that when I assumed the Department of Agriculture.
So to my ear, just very briefly, because we're just about out of time, But, David, to my ear, they laughed at a laugh line along the way there. But there was no reaction to the serious statement that she gave him less than a full effort at first. So is there anything to be taken from the crowd, as is now being talked about, you know, in some of the right-wing media, proving that NAACP circles are all too willing to buy into anti-white racism?
Look, you don't have... It's not news that there are jerks everywhere and of all races. And it's not news either that ethnically grounded organizations sometimes contain people who are there not because they're so proud of their own ethnic group, but because there's some other ethnic group they happen to dislike. It is completely disingenuous, however, for anyone to say that that was the point of this video, because if the speech had been completely innocuous and there had been crowd murmurings, it wouldn't be news. It was news because you had somebody who was now serving in the Obama administration, who was represented as having served in the Obama administration at the time of the speech, saying these things that sounded very discriminatory. She was the target. And to now retrofit a different explanation, all that is testing the credulity of people, and I wasn't born yesterday.
And so, I think anybody who's criticizing this has never been in a black church and never heard people speak, you know, people speak in the black church, people respond. A lot of black organization meetings work the same way. You say things, people nod, they nod in agreement, they sympathize verbally. That's what I hear going on in the conversation. You know, are there black racists? Of course there are. Can you smear a whole organization as racist because of one incident or one event, even if it were true? Of course you don't. That's the complaint that Breitbart had about the NAACP accusing the Tea Party of being racist, because there are some people in there who are, and there are some people who have raised posters and banners that cannot be construed as anything but racist, doesn't necessarily smear the whole organization.
Joel, what good can come of this incident, in your opinion?
A couple of things. I think a little bit more quality control in the news media about sources of information and what you use and how you use it fact-checking. I think an awareness that there are people with agendas who are political. I'm hoping that Breitbart is finally and totally discredited, but I think I'm a little bit too optimistic at this point about it. And I think it shows, again, that the incredible sensitivity about race and racism in America.
David, last word. What good can come of this? 15 seconds.
I think this incident proves that these methods work, and since they work, they will be used again.
You can read David Frum at frumforum.com. That's F-R-U-M, forum.com. You can read Joel Dreyfus at theroot.com, where he is the managing editor. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, New York State, in effect, vows to stop dumbing down its standardized tests. Stay with us.